Hey, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Thank you all for coming.
It's an enchanted evening.
Anyone can feel free to leave anytime they want or they need to, and you know, feel embarrassed or anything. I'm giving the Shir L'Nishmas. Next week is going to be, I think, on Wednesday night, and Thursday is going to be 10 years Chof Gimel El since all the yahrzeit of all the September 11th people. So. All the Jews, and there are a lot of good going for Nifter also, someone not Nifter who died, so for everyone. I came across this Gemara about 4 years ago when I was learning Chulin in my old Kol near Yaakov, near Jake, and it's known now as Kol Tol Tzvi, which is still around. It was a very just one line Gemara, pretty much, a couple lines, but it was very, very bothered me at the time. Baruch Hashem, I had some time to look into it, and was able to answer the big question that I had, not so much from Rashi and Tosfos, but more from the Achronim, and not so much from like the Pnei Yeshua and the Rabbi Akiva Eiger, but more from like the Hashkofa Svarim Achronim, and like putting a whole bunch of stuff together. So. Basically, the Torah tells us in Parsha Shoftim from a couple of weeks back that Kishuv actually tells us during Parsha Mishpatim that Mechashef Lo Sechaya repeats it again, and Shoftim adds on a few extra categories. And basically, there's a Gemara in Chulin which the Daf Yomi people learned about 2 months ago, which I would like to give the Chabura then, but just Baruch Hashem, the whole schedule is filled up with people giving Chabura, so this is the first available chance I got, which is an excellent thing. We should all be proud of that. So the Gemara and Daf Zayin Amud Beis, Chulin is talking about shechting animals, and that's the Gemara here isn't really talking about any of that on this blot. There was a whole story about Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair was doing nisim to save some people, and then Rabbi Chanina was quoted as saying something. And while we're already talking about Rabbi Chanina, the Gemara tells another story about him. That there's a pasuk in Devarim in the Parshas Veschanan that we're actually all very familiar with. The pasuk says, "Ata horesel adas ki ad Tohu alakim ein od milvado." Right. Is that it? Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, Hashem hu alakim ein od milvado. They make a lot of nice songs about it, various tunes, and excellent. Now, the context of the pasuk here is talking about Hashem took us out from Mitzrayim, and in Mitzrayim He showed us many great wonders and mofsim, osos and mofsim, and signs and wonders against the Mitzrayim, who happened to be big in the Kishuv. And we should know, we were shown all these signs and wonders, Hashem tells us, so that we know that there's just Hashem, Elohim, He's our God, Ein Od Mavalo, there's no other power other than Him. Now the Gemara in over here in Chulin, Zayin Amud Beis, at the bottom, towards the bottom of the page, says, Ein Od Mavado, that's the Pasuk, Amar Rabbi Chanina Vafilu Kishafim, that not only is Hashem all-powerful, even Kishofim has no power over Him. Okay, and he goes on to tell us a story that he is a saw the hive is called Mahadra Lamishkal Afra Mitusei Kari de Rabbi Chanina. Basically, there was a lady who wanted to do in Rabbi Chanina, wanted to kill him, and she was surreptitiously gathering dust from under his feet to try to bump him off with Kishof, try to kill him, try to do him in. And Rabbi Chanina tells him, I guess she wasn't doing it very surreptitiously, because Rabbi Chanina noticed, and he said, you can do whatever you want, take as much, here you missed some, there's some dust over here too, because you can take all the dust you want, you can do all the kish if you want, because the Pasuk says, Eino Mavado, there's, it's Eino Mavado Ksiv, that's what the Pasuk says, so kishif ain't going to work against me. Okay, very good. Now the Gemara asks a question. So everything's fine until now, right? And everything's fine until now. But now the Gemara asks a question. V'omer Rabbi Yochanan, what do you mean Eino Mavado? Rabbi Chanina just brushed it off. Eino Mavado. Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say Lo Menikra Shaman Kishofim Shemachachishin Pamaya Shamalia? Why is Kishuf called Kishuf? Because it's Kishuf is an acronym. The Kuf, or the Chof, excuse me, the Chof the Shin and the Fei, are an acronym from Shemachachishin Pamalya Shamalo, which means, well, the way it works is that you have a Chof by Shemachachishin, and you have the Shin by the Shin, and then Pamalya is the Pei, so that's the acronym for Kishuv. It's a bit of a twist, but you know, that's...
What's the phrase again?
Shemachachishin Pamalya Shamalo, which Shamalya, Ma'alo, which means overrules the heavenly... the heavenly, you know, spheres, basically. Mm-hmm. And basically what Rashi says is, what did Rabbi Yochanan mean when he said this? That Shalo Gozru al Adam, one second, it's a notrikin, Kishofim is notrikin, is an acronym from Achachishin Pamalya Shamala, meaning Shalo Gozru al Adam Zeh Lamus, heaven did not decree on this person to die. But what happened? This witch came along, this Mechashev came along, who this expert Kishuv practitioner came along, Mace al Yedei Kishuvim, and killed them, and killed this person with Kishuv. Okay? So the Gemara asks, how come Rabbi Yochanan is not nervous? Doesn't he know what Rabbi Yochanan said, that you know, Kishuv is by definition above, so to speak, above the heavenly spheres? So the Gemara answers, no, Rabbi Yochanan is different, because he... Dinofish Zechus, Rabbi Chanina, Shani Rabbi Chanina, Dinofish Zechus, because he had a lot of Zechusim, a lot of Zechuyos. He was a very choshev guy, he was a tzadik gomer, and he didn't have anything to worry about. Now, just to put this in context, the Gemara continues on a different story about Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Chanina says, Ein Adam Nokif Ezbo Milmata, Ela Imkein Machrizen Elov Milmala. And then he quotes a pasuk for that. A person does not stub his toe down here on this world, sustain any sort of painful injury, even an insignificant injury like stubbing your toe, which hurts but isn't, you know, life-threatening usually, unless that does not happen to a person, unless it's been decreed upon him from heaven. Okay, so that sounds more like the Torah Hashkafa that we're familiar with. You know, Hashem's in charge of everything, and there's Hashkafa Protis, and there's people, Hashem's watching over us, and nothing's going to happen to us. It's not supposed to happen. But to look at, but the Gemara puts this in the context of, that's true, but only to really chashuv people like Rabbi Chanina, only to tanoim, to tzaddikei gemurim like him, tanoim who are perfect and flawless, they have such protection. Joe Blow, you and me, Rabbi Yid, you know, we got stuff to worry about. Basically, my question here is, the implication for us is that, you know, we daven and do as much shuvah as we can, all el, right? Comes Rosh Hashanah, we shuckle away in shul and do as much introspection as we can. And we hope in daven that we were, you know, judged favorably on Rosh Hashanah and entered into the Sifrei Chaim. And a whole aseret simei shuvah, we are davening and doing more shuvah and more tzedakah, and going, you know, and fasting on Yom Kippur to, even if we were, you know, in the Beinoni, we're not sure yet, so we'll be put in the Sifrei Chaim. And, you know, and after Yom Kippur, we're, you know, still looking, as Ito points out, we're still finally judged in on Hoshana Rabbah, and then you're really finally judged on Hanukkah, and then you're really, really finally judged on Purim. So, but at the end, sometime, you know, you're going to have a Mirtz Hashem. We're hoping that you're going to have, it's going to be good, right? You're going to be in that Sifrei Chaim, and you're going to make it, you know, to the end of the year. But what this Gemara seems to be saying to us, to me at least, the way I understand it at this reading, is that, well, that's all very nice and true, but only if you're a Tzadik Gomor like Rabbi Chanina, and you have a lot of Zechusim, a lot of Zechuyos. But for everybody else, it just takes meeting up with Ron, you know, disgruntled Mechashev, you know, who's having a bad day, and there goes the whole thing. The deal's off, and game's over. You know, he's gonna Buffy the Vampire Slayer is gonna come, and you're gonna whip up some kishuv, and that's it. You know, you just have your final affairs in order. So that sort of goes against everything, you know, everything that we learn in Chovos Halvavos, everything we learn in the Chumash, everything we learn in the Musar Svarim, everything we learn in the Mara. What Rabbi Chanina himself says right afterwards, that nothing happens to your toe unless it's, you know, so we got a bit, you know, Houston, we got a bit of a problem here, right? So this is a pretty serious. You can tell me stories about Kishuv, freaky stories. They can be very scary. I'll be able to sleep well at night afterwards. You're telling me that, hey, Samber, you know, you tell me that you can be great all year, do your best, be a good guy, be judged in the Sifrei Chaim, right, and the whole, you know, Beis and Shamal up there, and come out good and yosher and have signed and approved Mu'ushar for another year, and then all of a sudden, you know, then it all disappears in a second. That's much more frightening and terrifying. That, and I will not sleep well at night knowing that. So so that's my question. So what's going on here with this Gemara? We're gonna get back to the Mirtz Hashem, we're gonna answer that question after just doing some basic Kishuf 101 over here. Not doing some Kishuf 101, but just explaining how the whole thing works, what it's all about. The Gemara in is actually almost verbatim in Sanhedrin, Sama Zionam of base. And Rashi just adds in a couple of words which don't really change anything. But basically he also says he puts it almost the same twist on it, just speaks it out. That what Rabbi Chanina was basically saying was that if what Rabbi Chanina was telling the Mechashef was that if Hashem is with me and I'm good, so I'm not afraid of you at all. And if I've done some bad things and I deserve to die, so I'm not afraid of that either, because it's from Hashem, it's not from you. So that sounds, you know, that's nice and comforting. But again, we still have our question. That's pretty much the only difference, so that the only added kinach from the Gemara Sanhedrin and Sama Zion with the story. As far as what Kishuf is, this part is a little boring. We'll try to go through it quickly. A few Mishnahs here in Sanhedrin say that Beis Din have to learn all about Kishuf so that they know how to don a person, how to sentence a person properly, to know if he's really chayev for Kishuf in the first place. That's interesting. As far here, it also talks about differences in Kishuf with different levels of Kishuf. The Mishnah here on Amud Aleph says that there are different levels of Kishuf. The worst one is Ha'osa Maisa. He's Chayiv Skila. Okay? Ha'osa Maisa means
Chayiv Skila?
Right. I mean, it doesn't say Chayiv Skila here in this Mishnah, but the context from previous Mishnayos is we're talking about people who are Chayiv Skila here. So one who actually does a Maisa Kishuf is Chayiv Skila. Now, what that means is basically I go ahead, mumble some incantations or do something with my hands and cause an actual action to happen, like the table across the room will lift up and go someplace else. And that table will actually go, you know, move somewhere else. There's another step of Kishuf, which isn't really Kishuf at all, but which is called Kishuf nonetheless, and that is Ha'ochez es ha'inayim, which basically means a sleight of hands, doing things which are faster than the eye, basically like magic today. So that is potter aval aser. Now, as far as whether, you know, magicians today are, you know, being over Asurim is actually a discussion amongst the poskim, which is beyond the scope of this chabura. But before you go out, you know, stoning anyone or you know, putting up signs banning, you know, magicians altogether, you should look into that. I definitely don't say that I said it was no good. So one who's does a sleight of hands, which, you know, basically means that the eyes can only see at a certain speed. You know, you can't see a speeding bullet because there are not enough, you know, time frames. The eye can only see a certain number of frames per second, and that's too fast. So if you're, you know, really fast and you somehow move a table from one end to the other of the room, but it's really didn't. It's just like done by a sleight of hand. So then that's potter aval aser. There's also a third stage which is totally mutter, and that is good old Sefer Yetzira, which talks about certain tanoim actually doing that. Every Friday they would put together some tziruf hashemos from Sefer Yetzira and get themselves a nice igla tilsa, a young calf, which was quite a delicacy back then, and eat it. So that was real, and these tanoim did, and that's mutter, you know, potter mutter. Basically, I'm skipping a whole huge section here, which because it's late, and we are basically, the Gemara here talks about a Maisa Kishuv done on its own versus a Maisa Kishuv done with the help of Shadim. And what the difference is, I have no idea. really, I'm not going to pretend I know. Basically, the Mechashev just doing things on his own is Kishuv without the help of Shadim, and then Kishuv with the help of Shadim is basically using him invoking Shadim to help him out. And they're both just as bad. They're both Chayav Skila, and there's no, you know, Halamaisa, there's no practical difference between the two of them. The Maharal and Bera Gola has all sorts of fascinating insights into where Shadim get their koach from, and it's truly fascinating, but it's too late at night for us to hold cup in it, so we're going to skip that too. There's actually a very interesting machlokas which comes up between the Rambam and everybody else, which some of you might be very well aware of, especially people who have looked into the great Slifkin debate of 2005. And that is basically the Rambam says in Hilchos Avodah Zarah in Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Yud Beis, basically says all the stuff about Kishuv. Not Yud Beis, Tes Zayin, excuse me. Devarim Ha'elo Kulo Divrei Sheker V'Chozov Hein. V'Hein Shato V'Hein Ovdei Avodah Zarah HaKadmonim. Basically, back in the good old days, 3,000-4,000 years ago, people were, you know, superstitious and involved in Kishuv. It wasn't real Kishuv, they weren't really doing things. And all this stuff about Kishuv that you find in the Gemara is not true. They fooled a lot of people. That's what it says.
How does he explain the Tanaim doing it?
So the Tanaim weren't doing Kishuv, they were doing Sefer Yetzirah, which is real. He's not talking about Sefer Yetzirah. Sefer Yetzirah is real with Tziruf Hashem. It's basically using the same building blocks that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with. This is Marmorim, the things he spoke, and connecting different letters together, and actually constructing real physical things. That's what they were doing. That's real. But the other things, he says, all Shekhar B'chazov, he has some very strong words for them, basically that only women and children believe in such things, and other things, other such statements that you don't want to tell your wives about. What's that?
All the messing with the Gemara, he says they're all trickery?
He said that they were all, well, yeah, so he gets knocked over the head for that.
What's the difference between Kishuv and Achiza Sinai?
According to the Rambam, exactly. Very good point. Very good question. So I'm gonna. I don't have an answer for that, but that is a very, very good question. Does everybody hear the question? Basically, if the Rambam is saying it's also Shekhar B'chazah, there should be no difference between actually doing a Maisa and just doing a Achiza Sinayim, because according to him they're both nothing. Doing a Maisa is also nothing.
The Gemara that says Achiza Sinayim is Patra B'chazah?
Yes, right. And the Rambam quotes that Gemara and the previous, you know, halacha or two, the previous halacha. Okay.
Why? How do you do skila then?
What's that?
How do you do skila? Why do you get skila for it on the Rambam?
Good question. I don't have an answer for that, except that we might touch on that. We're going to get back to this. So this is what the Rambam says about Kishuv, okay? And he doesn't just say that about Kishuv. He says that about, I was going to say, if we could really do Kishuv, we get the lights to stay on.
Let's just put the switch.
No, all right.
Oh, he's saying, how quickly can you turn the switch on with nobody else?
Right. So, okay. So basically, so the Bihar Groh in Yorodea, over here, if anyone wants to take a look at it, he has extremely strong words for the Rambam, and other people do also, but the Bihar Groh is like, you know, the most oft-quoted, you know, guy. He says basically the Rambam was nimshach after was pulled and blinded after the philosophers of his time, and I'm not really quite sure what philosophy there was in the 11th or 12th century Egypt that was into this. I mean, it seems more like what were they doing in the 1800s in Europe? The Enlightenment kind of idea, philosophy. But anyway, the Bihar Groh says...
It was very rationalist.
Rationalist, right. That was it. So basically disagrees very vehemently with the Rambam. Says that that everybody since the Rambam has basically hit him on the head, bashed him on the head, knocked some sense into him. However you want to describe... Nakad al Kadkado, or whatever the exact words are, because and criticized him and discredited him for making that statement. The interesting, and it's not just, you know, it's not just the Bir Grah, it's like a whole bunch of other Rishonim too, Anachron. So, okay, so that is quite a hardcore machlokus there. The there is something from the Emes Liakov that would be appropriate to interject at this point. And that is that apparently he points out that this machlokas between the Grah and the Rambam regarding Kishuf would really spill over to Avodah Zarah also. And then we can get in the right direction here and get back on track and try to understand exactly what's going on with the whole thing. The Emes Yaakov Kamenetsky says in Parshas Ves Chanan, on the Pasuk, Perik Dalad Pasuk Yud Test, the Pasuk is for Isa es Hashemesh ves Hayureach Asher Cholak Hashem Lokecha. Just look it up here, one second. The Pasuk here is talking about not replicating any heavenly forms or Avodah Zarah or anything like that. Yud Tes. Ufen Tisa Enecha Shemayim, lest you look up at the heavens, Verises Hashemesh, you look at the sun and the moon and the stars and the whole host of heavens. Minidachta Vishtachavisa, you want to bow down to them and serve them. Asher Cholak Hashem Elokecha Osam, L'chol Ha'amim Tachas Kol Hashemayim. Which Hashem has, those, you know, heavenly spheres, which Hashem has, Cholak Hashem Elokecha Osam, L'kola Amim Tachas Kol Hashemayim, that Hashem has distributed or apportioned to all the nations, all the Goyim. So you read that pasuk, and you could say like Rashi does. Rashi says that, what does it mean, which Hashem has apportioned to all the Goyim? That He gave the sun to all the Goyim to get light from, to tell them when the date, you know, when it's nighttime and daytime. Okay. Or you could do like the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra do, and they say that Hashem apportioned the sun and the moon and the heavenly host to all the Goyim to serve as, well, not exactly gods for them, but as Riyakov says here, to serve as mazalos, basically, as signs, as heavenly signs, and as heavenly indications of either the future or, you know, things like that. So what the Rabbi Yaakov here says, V'nira sheyesh kam achlokas ikoris b'yisod inyan Avodah Zarah. The Shitas Rambam, Bekama Mekomos, as we pointed out, the Avodah Zarah ain't b'mamish, it's not just Kshofim, it's Avodah Zarah too. The Rambam discredits as total garbage. Ain't b'mamish, kol ikriv, ain't lo kol klal, no koch at all. Now, here's the funny part. V'kol hamispalal eleha v'ovda, and whoever prays and worships Avodah Zarah, lo rak shehu over al iser, not only is he over the iser of Avodah Zarah, but you know what else? Much worse. Ela hu gam v'vazve zmano l'reik l'shav. He's being over Bittul Torah. Yeah, he's wasting time. Yeah, it's you know, it's to that point. That's pretty intense. You know, like serving, wasting, being over Avodah Zarah is one thing, but like, you know, Bittul Torah, now we're talking serious, right? So Avodas Ramban and also the Ibn Ezra, which is interesting that they actually agree on something for once. But basically, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give the sun and the moon? So incidentally, we're not talking about Avodah Zarah here like Baal Peor and Markulis and things like that, which have no, you know, which Hashem had no shaychus to. We're talking about the sun and the moon and the heavenly spheres which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. Basically, they have specific abilities. Lashpia al umoso, Chazal say this also, that they have specific abilities and times to reflect on, to reflect on their metzias, on their reality, on their future, on their status in the world. And you know, there is an Isra Avodah Zarah to worship them. However, what Riyakov says over here, that if a person were to actually, if a goy If a non-Jew were to actually, perhaps, I don't know, a Jew perhaps, but if a non-Jew were to go and worship the sun and the moon the right way, and to dive into it, and, you know, do whatever, do some sort of prescribed avodah of avodah zara, there would be some toelis to it. Something would happen to his benefit. I mean, ultimately, it would be to his detriment, because he's going to burn in hell for a long time, if not forever. You know, etc., etc. But he could benefit in from that somehow. Basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in a way that, you know, they have some sort of power to, if a person, Hashem has given people the ability to do certain actions that could influence things up there and reflect positively on him. Again, that is avodah zara, so don't do it. But this is a machlokas between, this is an expansion of the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban and the, you know, ultimately the Be'er HaGra. And it's very fascinating because we always discount avodah zara out of hand as, you know, totally ridiculous, sort of like the Rambam. But what he's saying over here is that there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately it's him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, these things specifically, sun, moon, and heavenly spheres to work, that people can have control over them, and that's, you know, okay, fine. Now, if we take a look at the Nefesh HaChayim in Shar Gimel, here it is. No, that's not my place mark. There it is. Shar Gimel Perek Yud Aleph, Perek Yud Beis. Basically, what the Nefesh HaChayim does is address our Gemara and say outright that he basically solves the whole puzzle. And he says that the kishuv, what is kishuv? Kishuv is an expression of, he uses a bunch of words which I can repeat, but I don't really understand them. An expression of kochas atuma of the merkava tameo, okay, the impure chariot or the impure vehicle. Okay, well, that's great. So the basically, what a machashev does when he harnesses, when he grabs hold and uses these things, is he forces a certain kochos in the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately created, and that he forces certain powers and kochos to bring about activities which are the opposites of the natural kochos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the world. Okay, in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world to work a certain way. The sun comes up, sun goes down, all the laws of gravity and laws of nature and physics and things like that. When a person grabs hold and utilizes certain kochos tumo, he can override that. He can override the physical, the laws of physics. Now, basically, I'll just read it to you in English outright. I can read in Lashon Kodesh also. This is a sefer here, Das Torah, which is a bunch of.
How does that answer your question?
I'm going to get to it right now. But it's basically, and he quotes our Gemara, says the ability of the impure powers to change nature was given by Hashem only through the stars and the constellations. That's the main thing. But in other words, when we learn our Gemara and we say, "Hey, it was gozer, it was nigzer on a person to live," and the Mechashev comes along and kills him, the only gezerah we're talking about is through the mazalos, okay? In other words, in the stars, in the astronomy, in the astrology, it was nigzer on this person to live. Now, what happened on Rosh Hashanah by the Kisei HaKavod with the judgment that he's going through is a completely different area. That's not what the Gemara is talking about. But the Gemara here that we read originally was talking about was that it was nigzer on a person to live the year as far as his mazel goes. But what Hashem does in the Olam HaSel Yonim is completely detached from that. Ein mazel b'Yisrael, and Jews aren't relevant for that.
So why do you have to say Nefishim Zachlasa? Just say he's Jewish.
Say that again? Oh, because he has a lot of... Yeah.
But he just needs to be Jewish.
He just needs to be Jewish. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Never thought of that. But I'll just read you on the continuation here of the Nefesh HaChayim. Ein od milvado, because there's no power in the world except that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, and there is an astoundingly powerful method to nullify all forces that exist in the world that attempt to harm a person. When a person fixes in his heart that there is in fact no other power than Hashem in the world, and he completely nullifies in his heart and totally ignores any other factor or power in the world, and he attaches his thoughts only to Hashem, then God nullifies the ability of all forces in the world to harm him. That's what the Nefesh HaChaim says. So that answers our main question at the beginning. There's just one last thing that I want to say from the Emes LeYaakov, and that is basically, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the world like this in the first place? That you have Mazalos and you have Kishuv. You know, we could do, I think we could, you know, I would think, my humble opinion, we could do just fine without all of it, right? Just forget all the Kishuv. And in fact, that's the way it works nowadays, isn't it? Anybody see any Kishuv around? Anybody see any, you know, I mean, astrology and astronomy, astrology isn't really thought much more about it, you know, nowadays. And Ryaku Kamenetsky asks by Parshas Va'era, when Moshe Rabbeinu was dealing with the Chartume Mitzrayim. This is in Shemos Perek Zion Pasuk Chav Beis. On the Pasuk V'yasu Kain Chartume Mitzrayim Biltehem, he asks, what's the deal with these, you know, we don't have Shadim nowadays, we don't have Dibukim, all these things that the Gemara talks about, all these things that the Chumash talks about. You know, I mean, it's the Shaila on the Rambam we were saying before, not just stories from the Gemara, but stories from the Chumash, right? I mean, the Chumash also speaks outright about, you know, the various, you know, when Shaul goes and asks the Ma'onein or the, not the Ma'onein.
It's not the Chumash, first of all. It's the Machlokas, if that was real or not.
Who's the Machlokas with?
So it's Machlokas of Mepharshim.
With the Mepharshim?
Yeah, some say that he was duped.
The whole thing was probably the Rambam followers.
No, it was Radak.
Okay. What's that?
It's the Maisa that we're talking about with his
Shaul with the which
in more right. Okay, got it.
So, but I mean, if the yeah, okay. So basically, what Yaakov Kamenetsky says is that there had to be Kishuf in the world, there has to be Shadim in the world, and Hashem had to create the world this way because every power that exists in the world, anything good has to have a polar opposite corresponding to it, right? But the term that Ryakov uses is zel hazeh. That's basically, you know, things corresponding to each other. So any good, any tova, any kedusha that you have, there has to be an equally powerful kochos hatuma and kochos hara opposite in the world. Now, why does it have to be like that? Because without that, you don't have any koch of bechira. You don't have any bechira chafshis in the world. The examples that Ryakov gives is that when Paro was being confronted by these nisim, by the Makos, and he tells the Chartumim to replicate Kinim, and so he basically, you know, if you're looking at open miracles, your Bechira disappears, right? You don't really have a choice to deny it.
Well, he did.
Well, ultimately, because Hashem because Hashem hardened his heart. After Kinim? The fifth Makkah. What does he say by Kinim? By Kinim, the Chartumim. One second, no, that was by the fifth Makkah already. But after the fifth Makkah, the Chartumim disappear. But by the Chartumim Mitzrayim, excuse me, by Kinim, it says that the Chartumim tried to replicate Kinim and they couldn't. Okay? But so what do they tell to Paro? They say it's Etzba Elokim. Right, it's Espelo Kimze. So Ryakov says, what was Paro thinking about that response? Paro was thinking, they're saying it's Espelo Kim. They're just really too embarrassed to admit that Moshe is a better magician than they are. And that's why they're attributing it to God. So that was the Zel Umazez there. That was the ability to, that was the Bechira that HaKadosh Baruch was giving him. Another example that Ryakov gives is by the Yamsuf. When Paro gets to the Yamsuf and sees it split, what does he think he was looking at a nace? Why did he send his whole army in? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had wind blowing the whole night, and Paro attributed this, what he was seeing, to that. And that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to give him the, you know, instead of seeing a nace and removing the power of Bechira from him, he was able, he had wind blow the whole night to give Paro the ability to think otherwise, that it wasn't an obvious nace. And basically, the whole time, over the centuries, when Bnei Yisrael were hearing Navi, Nevuah, from Moshe Rabbeinu, from Yeshua, going down the line, the whole time that there was Nevuah, and they wanted to give Musar to Klal Yisrael, so, Bnei Yisrael didn't really have any Bechira to refuse to hear it, unless there were other people doing Mofsim also, that were not Nevi'im, that were, using Kochel Satumah, like Kishuf, and things like that. So that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to create the world to work this way. Now, as the Nevuah disappeared, and as the Bas Kol disappeared, basically Yaakov gives a succession of things that happened slowly. He still had, after Nevuah disappeared, he still had a Bas Kol. And so then you had a bunch of Shadim running around in the times of the Gemara. Once the Bas Kol disappeared, no more Shadim, so then there was, then there was pretty much nothing left. He still had holy people, he still had Tzaddikim, Rishonim and Achronim around, so you still had a bunch of Dibukim around, okay? And Rabbi Yaakov ends off here and he says he remembers when he was in Kelm reading a letter from Elchanan Wasserman, that the Chofetz Chaim is called to deal with the Dibuk in some place. It's apparently a well-known story. So Rabbi Elchanan writes that according to the Chofetz Chaim told him that L'chora, that will be the last Dibuk we ever encounter, sin. I mean, apparently there have been Dibukim since then. But basically because, the Chofetz Chaim was around, there had to be Kochel Satumah around and Dibuk involved to give people the option of seeing someone like the Chofetz Chaim and rejecting that good that he had to offer. The last thing that Rabbi Yaakov, it's not the last thing he says, but it's just I want to address it. Rabbi Yaakov says over here that basically we can using this we can be miyasha the machlokas between the Rambam and the Gro. What seemed to be an irreconcilable machlokas between the two of them can now be explained. And that is when the Rambam said what he said, he was talking about in his generation when there was no more Dibukim and Kishuf and Avodah Zarah and things like that. He doesn't say that Mefarish. He didn't say it from the beginning. He says, let me read you what he says. V'dvar ma'ela kulan divrei shekhar v'chozav hein. He's not saying in the time of the Gemara. The Rambam's writing this in the 12th century, right? Or the 11th century. And he's saying a halacha which was given in the time of the Gemara. And he's saying this halacha is halacha lemaisa. This is how we paskin. But no one today is going to be over this because we don't have. No one can do a maisa kishuf anymore. No one's capable of doing it. That's what, according to Rabbi Yaakov, that's what he would be saying. Now, if, 2,000 years ago in the times of the Gemara, if someone does a maisa kishuf, he's going to be chayiv skila. And that's the way we paskin. And he's citing that as the halacha. But nowadays, kulan divrei shekhar v'chozav, no one's capable of doing a maisa kishuf. It doesn't exist anymore. Kochel Satumah aren't present and necessary, aren't around to allow for such a thing to take place.
That's where we are.
That's the way that means. Well, what else could it mean?
Well, you are.
No.
No, I don't see the Rambam.
Well, the Grod understood the Rambam Kipshutu, not like Rabbi Yaakov.
The Grod is talking about Gemara.
What's that?
The Grod also lived in later.
I think what the Grod understood the Rambam to mean, that all the stories in the Gemara were ridiculous and misunderstood and never happened. And the Gro is arguing that you can't discount them in entirety because they're in the Gemara teaching us important, other deep important lessons, not just the Pshuto, but the deeper meanings and type of things that the Maral will be talking about and things like that. He understood the Rambam as discounting the whole thing from the times of the Gemara is never happening. And that's the way everybody learns the Rambam.
The creator is motivated with the Rambam.
I'm sorry?
And the Gro is Cholak or is he motivated with the Rambam?
No, the Gra is arguing in the strongest possible terms on the Rambam. But what Rabbi Yaakov is saying, based on everything he's explained, and the sequence of the history, that in the olden days when you had tremendous Kedusha, Nevuah, and Rishonim who were capable of being Mechayim Mesim and bringing people back to...
He's referring to what happened in the Zman of Chumash. Saying what they did in the Kolsman of Malunim. He's talking about the Goyim from thousands of years ago.
So, okay, so... Now he, I think he's... He says that's where it originated from.
And he says they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think they were right, but it's just usher, you're stupid. That's what he says.
Right.
not my language, his.
Yeah. All right, so it's a kashan Rav Yaakov.
You'd rather have a kashan Rav Yaakov than a Rambam.
But we're still... Rav Yaakov
says that's what the Rambam means, huh?
Take a look. This paragraph. Well, we're still left with a huge kasha on the Rambam. Rav Yaakov was trying to make the Rambam good. Anyway, guys, that's it. Yeshkoach.
The prophet's going to come back.